Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cross over the road, my friend, ask the Lord his strength to lend. His compassion has no end.
Beefy!
Cross
Beefy.
Over the road.
Savour the flavour, it's the Football Ramble, ladies and gentlemen. Good to have you back. My name's Marcus and I've got three beauties with me. Jim.
Hello.
Pete.
Don't go breaking my heart now.
And Luke.
All right.
How we doing, boys? Right. Now, ooh, what have we got here? Real Madrid are going to build their own island. Can you believe it?
Yep, it's completely consistent with the character.
It'll open in the next few years, but we will talk about that later in the show. But I would like to ask you, Saucy Three, if you could have any football club open their own island, which one would it be, Jim?
Well, I would choose my own club, Arsenal,
own one.
To have their own island. And given that, you know, Gunnosaurus is a huge part of the Arsenal legacy.
Yes.
And
he's
future,
their best player.
He is. He really is. It would be sort of basically Gunnosaurus Park. It'd be like Jurassic Park.
Oh,
but with huge, like,
clever girl.
Huge mechanical Gunnosauruses and stuff like that. And you'd have sort of training matches where, you know, when you were open to sort of shoot, the trainers would go, "Shooter!"
And then when we're being hunted, a clever girl, instead of getting mauled by you, we just fire you a t-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
if
you shoot wide,
damn!
Yeah. Glad we're all on the same wavelength there. Would there be a part of the island which has got, like, long grass and you just don't go in there?
Yeah, there would.
Yeah.
That's where they keep, I don't know, Martin Keown.
Excellent. Strong start to the show. Pete?
Well, mine would not be dinosaur-related.
It's a shame.
But it would be indeed be an island. It would be a knockabout fun place based on the popular football club, Chelsea Football Club.
Right.
Basically. And it would be like topsy-turvy. All the laws would be topsy-turvy. Like,
is it,
you know,
Ibiza?
Like, you know, like Ashley Cole didn't get in trouble for shooting that guy.
Yes. Yeah.
But like then that player did get in trouble for releasing a smoke bomb.
He got fired.
So if you forgot your tax disc, death penalty. But if you if you murdered someone, it's fine, bro. This is Chelsea FC Island.
It would almost be a lawless state.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Just like the Chelsea training ground is, apparently.
So it's basically Cobham.
In Surrey,
pretty much.
Good, like it. Okay. Locals.
Portsmouth, of course.
Yeah.
And it would be like one of those really untrustworthy travelling fairs.
Would it be a stone throw away from Portsmouth?
Yeah,
because that's a very expensive stretch of water.
Of course it would.
Isn't Fratton Park on an island?
Portsea Island, pretty much.
Britain.
Well, the whole of Portsmouth is an island, really. Yeah, Portsea Island. But it would be like a travelling fair where, you know, the coconut shy with the coconuts would be stuck down and you could never win.
Yeah.
It'd be really expensive.
The milk jugs would be too thin to allow the ball to go in.
Exactly.
Would it be like the fun fair in Pinocchio, where it seems quite fun at first but becomes quickly nightmarish?
Really sinister.
Would there be a danger, Luke, if the current in the sea got quite high, then Portsmouth might go under?
They would, yeah.
The
absolutely.
Island, of course.
The weather would be crap as well.
if it's just off the coast of Portsmouth.
It would be rubbish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's fine.
That's what you do then with X amount of billion. I go for Associazione Calcio Milan, and the reason is because they'll probably do it now that Real Madrid have won.
Yeah.
But I would just think that you could get up to all sorts there. I'd like to see the Brazilian contingent playing beach football on the beach, yeah. Obviously. That would be quite a nice touch. Zlatan would just be in a big massive tower looking down on everybody.
I imagine a big like Sphinx of Zlatan.
Sphinx of Zlatan.
Sphinx-esque, isn't he? Zlatan, I'd say.
Yeah, that's a great shout, that. Cassano would probably be in charge of catering. There'd be masses of food about. Bunga bunga parties every night.
Yeah, like Beckham popping every so often.
Do you know what I mean?
I want to go to your one.
And the Midland Lab would sort out all the hangovers and stuff. They invent a hangover cure.
The Midland Lab.
Party Island.
If you felt poorly, you'd go to the Midland Lab and just sort you out.
Yeah, exactly. Alessandro Nesta, he could maybe provide a bit of entertainment, the Strokes tribute act. Yeah.
Would you have like an old boy sort of section with Papin and Massaro and Lentini, all that sort of stuff?
Clarence Seedorf, Albertini.
A bit Clarence Seedorf would greet you off the plane.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
It would be lovely.
Ambassador.
All
and that's why you've
Zidane
got the
point. Head
are you giving me the point?
The
I'm giving him the point. Yeah.
Well, this is subversive.
Unprecedented.
Yeah.
Well, I'll take him.
Oh. Of course you will.
And I'll multiply them. So I've got all of the points. Right, let's move on to the Premier League, where Manchester City didn't get all the points at Stoke City. But before we talk about that, I'd like to talk about Tony Pulis being above the law. He managed to... He got a drive...
Adonis.
He got a speeding fine and 3 points on his licence, which takes him up to 15 points. That means he shouldn't be driving on the roads of Great Britain.
Peaks Island, probably fine.
Yeah, he'd be he'd be dead for that, wouldn't he? He'd be the opposite.
He'd be one of those Jeeps. Oh, that's Jim's, right?
Yeah, yeah. But he's managed to avoid getting a driving ban, whereas the rest of the population would have had one, because he argued successfully that Stoke City would suffer so much that his team may even get relegated, and that would basically be terrible for the city of Stoke and its people.
A glorious torrent of codswallopers. It really is.
What's a grumpy eyebrowed bellend?
Do
you even argue that?
This is the greatest thing since Alex Ferguson got away with it for saying he had diarrhoea and he needed the toilet.
Oh yeah,
and he got off, didn't he?
That's true. Well, apparently, Pulis is based in Dorset.
Yeah, that seems strange.
Which is a long way away.
A lot of managers are like that. I think Redknapp still lives down in Sandbanks, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's a bit nearer to London.
But it's a long drive every morning.
But when he was going to go to the Newcastle job, they practically agreed to fly him in every day.
Really?
Pulis also said that he can't have a chauffeur, didn't he? In case the chauffeur overhears his secret transfer dealings and sort of passes them on.
I don't think that's the most red hot information in the Premier League. What clobber are you going to be?
It's only a few months of the year anyway.
It's breathtaking how Pulis managed to do that, but he has, and he's back on the roads, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
So
and steering his team to a point at home to Man City.
Very good. Peter Crouch with a peach.
Yes, it was.
Goodness me.
Goal of the season.
Such a good goal, it caused David Silva to go off with a head injury.
Just from thinking about it. His brain couldn't compute it.
The technique was beautiful.
It was. That touch, just, oh, God.
Yeah. I don't think the ball...
Peter Crouch.
Is it fair to say Peter Stan Collymore liked it on top?
Stan Collymore had the air of a man who just witnessed the Hindenburg going down. Like a proper... Oh, my God!
And in a way, he had. His reaction was, if anything, I mean, because this is a Peter Crouch goal of the season. They don't come along every 5 minutes.
No.
It was the only reaction thus far I've heard that actually overstated it a bit.
Yeah, exactly. If he'd turned into a gas, it would be, because it wasn't really clear what had happened, because the main commentator was describing events, and Crouch just got the ball. Stan Collymore screams in the most blood-curdling fashion possible, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, on the radio, who knows what has just ticked?
Well, had there been 25 passes before that, maybe a scream. But
an appropriate sort of, you know, sentence to follow, oh my God, in a footballing sense, would be, what a goal. But the way that sounded like an appropriate sentence to follow that would be something like, it's eating my head.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God!
And he doesn't speak for the next 2 minutes, which is the best thing. He doesn't really explain why he's
kicking himself up on the floor.
If he's anything like me, I was going to say, he's trying to find his remote control again. Because I was out of my seat.
You were absolutely loving it.
Yeah, I couldn't believe
that.
It was
brilliant, wasn't it?
It's a great goal.
I think it was one of those goals where it's just completely out of nowhere. And even as he controls it, you would never think of shooting there. And Crouch said, oh, well, I've, you know, didn't he say I've been doing it a lot in training?
Yeah.
You don't do that. Yeah. Because that would be, you're wasting your training session if you're trying to score from there.
They're going everywhere, like miles away and stuff.
I'll go at Stoke, he might have been a cross.
I don't know if you boys feel the same, but for me, one of the things that made the goal look even nicer was that Joe Hart was at full stretch.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah.
as good when the keeper's just rooted.
That's right.
It's much better when he's given it somewhere, he still can't get there. Yeah. You know?
Does he deserve to get back in the England squad for that alone?
Just for that, yeah.
Someone
tweeted me saying, I told you that Crouch could score against against good teams. You said he only scores against rubbish teams. He's always been my favourite player in the Premier League. So why are you telling me this?
Firstly, I said he regularly scores a lot of goals against weaker international positions.
Yeah.
So it's confused.
Man City aren't an international team.
No.
Regardless of what they think about themselves.
That's right. And if he did that 10 more times, he wouldn't even get close.
10 is very, very generous, Pete.
Do you know what I hate is the commentator cliche when someone scores a great goal and the commentator immediately goes, he won't score a better goal like that in his career. Just enjoy the moment.
Or if Messi had done that, we'd be saying it with shit.
But it's basically, imagine if you scored a goal like that and someone going, oi, it's all downhill from now.
Yeah,
you're not going to get better than that. Yeah. Enjoy this, mate.
Should do a cancer now, just retire.
your career has been terminated.
Yeah.
Remember when Emil Heskey scored that amazing scissor kick for Liverpool? And everyone was just like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
Crouch scored a lovely scissor kick.
I was ringing Sky when that happened. No, there's been a fault in my box. There's something's gone wrong. I don't know if you've seen it. You probably haven't seen it because you're in a call centre, but trust me, this box is broken. But it's another 2 points dropped by your City away from home.
Exactly. And a good point for Stoke, but is it just sliding away from City?
Well, it seems that way, doesn't it? But Stoke are just the archetypal nightmare away trip, aren't they? You know, it's just it's no surprise, really. It's so difficult to go and get anything from there. So I would think, you know, still, is there 9 games left?
Yeah, but United have got a much easier run in, though.
Yeah, true, but
they've got to go away. Yeah. To the Etihad, which will be a delicious
I think
effect.
We all want that, don't we, right? Last day of the season. Oh, sorry, that match to be the title.
I think that'd be great.
I think that City's home form has been spectacular. They've got 100% home record basically, haven't they?
Yeah.
But they've lost some funny away games. I mean, they lost away to Swansea, lost away to Everton as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
And Sunderland, they lost away to Sunderland too.
They dropped points at Stoke, they dropped points at Fulham a long time ago.
United won
the
title last season by winning 18 and drawing one of their home games. They're undefeated all season. It'd be interesting to see what happens.
United are cruising at the moment as well.
Did you see, I read something today, I'm not sure if it's true, but I read that Mancini's on a pilgrimage to Eastern Europe, some place where there's been several sightings of the Virgin Mary. He's gone there.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I don't know if it's picked up much in the English press, but that's what I read. I mean, I don't know if it's true or not. But I mean, that's a bit of a worry.
Sure, it's not something for sport relief.
God, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I have no more details than that. Feel free to laugh at me when this show comes out. Yeah. It proves to be a spoof, but I read that today.
Balotelli's gone. I don't believe what he's done.
Yeah.
Don't believe what I'm reading.
Yeah, Balotelli's gone. I left a message on his voicemail. I didn't think he'd fall for it. speaking about David Silva, but he obviously went off. He's really fallen away, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
What do you think of his sort of
form? I thought he was excellent against Chelsea, I must say.
But you think about the first half of the season, everyone was saying, what, player of the year, blah, blah, blah. I'd probably still have Van Persie, but he would be a contender.
But he's not been great.
But he's fallen away, definitely, with his form.
That whole entire match was all about the Bosnian in goal versus the Bosnian who was trying to get the ball in the goal for me. There's a couple of chances for Dzeko in particular,
I think that
another one who's fallen away slightly. The start of the season, he was absolutely magnificent.
Yeah,
it's a lot of competition for players, and sometimes it goes the wrong way. You know, it's just kind of like. Oh,
but it definitely does.
No matter how good I play, I might be replaced by I don't know Tevez or something.
Balotelli's not been particularly good lately. Either.
Well, I mean, it's been said a thousand times before because it's happened. But you know, they were unbelievable at the start of the season. City, they looked as though they were going to walk it, and then of course they've lost a lot of games or they've
well, to a degree. The point. Same can have been said of United. You know, they're just sort of having a bit more of a smoother patch now. But you forget how little there is in it between them.
True. But without a doubt, City started the season.
Marcus is right, in my opinion, because what you've got to look at is you think City are inexperienced in winning the Premier League, obviously. They would probably be thinking to themselves before Christmas, we've got to build up a lead. Because United have got players coming back now
as well. Yeah.
And United have got an easier run in, and they've got so much experience. And Ferguson will pile the pressure on them.
Well, then the old mind games have started. started,
yeah,
haven't they?
Openly.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't he say something like, yeah, I mean, they can respond if they want, I've got plenty more where this came from. Pretty much.
It was a time when Mind Games jumped the shark. Yeah. Mind Games became self-aware.
Yeah.
It might be the end of Mind Games.
Didn't Mancini say something like getting Scholes back was a bit desperate?
No, it's Patrick Vieira said that.
Oh, no, that's right, Patrick Vieira. And then he was like, well, Tevez.
Yeah. Oh, Tevez. That's what he said. That was the extent of his press conference. One word for you, Tevez.
Which is another word for prodigal son in Manchester. Now, Chelsea drew 0-0 with Tottenham Hotspur.
It was a nothing-nothing result.
It was a nothing-nothing result. Although it threatened not to be. There was Gareth Bale hitting the bar and whatnot.
There's lots of chances in that game, wasn't
I
there?
Thought Spurs could have edged it, do you think? Petey?
I don't care.
Well, yeah.
I'm just enjoying the
tune in next week when he might.
That part of the league is sort of going, this creaking inevitability that Spurs and Chelsea are kind of going to fall away because that's what's written in stars effectively.
Well, Spurs are fourth now, 3 points behind the Arsenal.
Got two home games coming up, Bolton and Swansea, I think. So, I mean, they've got a chance to. They haven't won a game for absolutely ages in the league, have they?
Yeah, I think it's four games, is it? They lost three on the bounce.
They drew. I mean, really, a draw at Stamford Bridge isn't a bad result.
No, not at all. Not in the slightest.
Yeah.
No, but they need wins, don't they?
I thought Spurs had a bit about them.
Well, this is what we've been saying before, isn't it? All through this run, they've still been playing well, so they'll get that next win.
Yeah.
I imagine. Is it Bolton next they've got?
Home to Bolton. I just think sometimes they look, on one level, they've been playing all right, and on other levels, they look like, oh, I don't know if they are actually playing that well. And Redknapp's saying some funny things. I mean, he said last week that, oh, it doesn't matter if I'm here or not. They'll just get used to a new manager. And it's like, well, what are you talking yourself out of a job for?
The England thing has really thrown him, let's be honest.
Yeah, of course it has. And it's rattled all of them.
It has. If you're playing for a manager, you enjoy playing for him, you think, oh, is he going to go, well, now? Is he going to take it part-time? There's players in that Spurs side who would think, I might have a chance for England if he gets in. You know, your Aaron Lennon's perhaps, and maybe Dawson to a lesser extent.
But surely he must have sat them down and sort of said, because he's not made the decision now. They must have a contingency plan in.
Yeah.
And he would have said to his players, look, if the offer is, I'm going on at the end of the season. Mm. Not now, at the end of the season. So I'm at least here until then. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, lads. But just get us to the end of the season. Let's have a final push and get us into the
But he might not have said
spot.
That. I know that seems the logical thing. But you never know what goes on with a football club. The
chairman probably does all that, doesn't he?
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What, pick of the team? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Dress myself now, chair me does that.
Yeah.
also, coming out of the Chelsea camp, Eddie Newton.
Eddie Newton.
Slight better fortune for him because he's obviously the interim assistant coach at Chelsea at the moment. He had four of his medals stolen over a decade ago.
Current.
Cup Winners' Cup, League Cup, Super Cup winners' medal, and FA Cup runners' up medal.
Hillsborough Cup.
But they've been found. They've been found. No, not Pickles. He's long gone. Yeah. They were due to be sold at a sporting memorabilia auction at Northampton Rugby Club. And they were found to be stolen goods and they were withdrawn from the auction.
Will they return to
Hopefully.
Eddie?
Hopefully. Yeah,
so. Otherwise, that story would be a bit annoying. If
It's Eddie Newton's medals.
Yeah,
they've turned up, just in case anybody was wondering. What a win, though, for Wigan.
Oh, yes. We were only saying the other week, weren't we? They've been playing well. If they put some chances away, they'll start picking up some wins. I thought the penalty was quite harsh, though.
Wigan have got a good record against Liverpool. I don't think they've lost them in 3 seasons.
First win at Anfield.
Yeah, but they've not lost them in about 3 years, though.
Is that right?
Yeah, Liverpool.
Oh, I think they drew there last year.
Yeah, Liverpool are in an awful state of mind, aren't they?
They just seem a bit panicky, almost.
There's their home
it's like the season's
gone.
Just slipping away from them. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because they were involved in that incredible game at Loftus Road last week.
Yeah.
Where they
snatched
threw away a 2-0 lead.
This is where the season's getting dangerous for the sides at the top. Because, you know, the sides that are scrapping for their lives, they tend to realise around now, oh, God, we've got to burst every sinew just to stay here.
They're 8 points behind Newcastle now.
Yeah, they're 28 points off the top. I mean, we put it into perspective. I mean, I think there's also, I'm right in saying that if the season started on January
Motherwell-esque.
If the season started on January the 1st, they'd be in the bottom three, Liverpool.
Is that right?
Doug Leash said today that he was astounded that people are saying it's an underwhelming season for them and stuff. It's like, all right, yeah, you did win the Carling Cup, but come on. You can't be that surprised by this. So expectations were a lot higher than that. And I think reasonably so as well, given
the money they spent.
The signings just haven't bedded in.
It's the same old story for Liverpool, I'm afraid.
It must be so frustrating. They haven't won. Yeah. See these cycles happen over and
over
again.
Absolutely, they haven't won the league or put in a real proper shift in the league for a long time now. They've not come in close to winning it for so long.
They've had probably two tilts at the title in since they won it, which is 20 odd years ago. I mean. They've missed Lucas massively. Yep. They've not had. I mean, in fairness to them, they've not had a chance to play because Gerrard has been out as well. They've not had a chance to play their sort of first choice core of a team. But that's what happens sometimes. That's football.
They missed Suarez for a long time when he was banned, and also, obviously he's. The whole controversy there.
He needs someone to play with him, doesn't he? He needs someone alongside him. When he scored all those goals at Ajax, everyone was scoring those goals for Ajax. We had Huntelaar with him and one or two others. He needs someone alongside him, and I presume Carroll was designed to do that job, but Carroll's not shown the commitment, the fitness, the hard work, talent, to be frank. So it's not working for him. Suarez, they need to get another striker in, which is ludicrous, given that they spent so much money on strikers already.
Is there an argument to play him and Dirk Kuyt up top together? I mean, Kuyt holds the ball up very well. You know, more of a foil for Suarez.
But Kuyt,
I know,
always
he does well out wide. But that's the thing with Kuyt, isn't it? He's such a reliable player. He'll put a shift in anyway. He'll do
well. I think maybe they're a bit lightweight in the middle, are they? You know,
well, they miss Lucas. Simple as that. He's such a big player for them. Their win percentage with Lucas and without him is I can't remember the figures, but it's vastly different.
Which is crazy, isn't it? Because Lucas had so much criticism.
He's been divided.
I can't remember a time when I have enjoyed a Liverpool press conference less. Because it's proper siege stuff. He comes out with such nonsense. I actually turn the television off whenever I see the manager of Liverpool Football Club because I know he's going to say something contrary or stupid. I just find his press conference just difficult to listen to because he's just such a vinegary man at the moment.
Do you know, I think that's a tactic that he has to sort of pull up the drawbridge and sort of say, you know, we're in it together. It's siege mentality sort of thing.
But it's every week, though. There's no sort of like I know what humility. You mean, there's no sort of. It's just kind of like, so what went wrong today? Well, he's got more goals than us. It's like, oh, sod off. Yeah. You know what I mean? Stop being so fucking facetious. Either do the press conference or don't do it. You know?
Unless this is just the sort of thing he's saying on the training ground, and this is why it's not working. Right, guys, you need to score more than them.
I know they took in 50 million. For Torres, I suppose me saying they spent so much money on strikers, it was a bit disingenuous. But if you are going to take 50 million for a striker and then spend it on two strikers, I mean, Suarez has been decent enough. He just not scored that many. He doesn't take his chances. But 35 million for Carroll looks like arguably the worst piece of business in the history of football.
Aside from maybe Danielson.
So you can as an outsider, you can see clubs where you say, right, that's their transfer strategy. Like Newcastle obviously put their mind in, they were going to sign sort of slightly potentially injury prone but with something to prove young players, and that's really worked for them. And a classic example of the opposite of that, in my opinion, was when Arsenal really panicked towards the end of a transfer window, signed loads of players like Santos, so they could have got Enrique for cheaper. They signed Mertesacker, so with other options like Cahill and stuff.
Arteta as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was almost like they didn't have a strategy. Now I understand that's working for them now. But at Liverpool, I don't think they've got any sort of transfer strategy at all, it seems to me.
I think, you know, obviously Andy Carroll and Jordan Henderson were signed as players for the future, and it's just not working yet. You know, maybe it will come to fruition.
I mean, fair play to them. I think
the price tags on both those players have really put the spotlight on them.
Well, they wanted to sign probably English players, I think, with Carroll and Downing and Henderson, and fair play to them, you put the hand in the pocket for that. But those players arguably haven't performed. I mean, Downing's been okay at times.
Downing's had so much criticism from the Liverpool fans. He's just, his end product's not really been there. No, he's picked up a bit recently.
It's not your responsibility to pack the bench for England, you know.
No. But we're going back to what you said, Pete. I think you're right. I think Dalglish came in as a caretaker manager more than anything. I'm not sure if it was the long-term solution that they're really looking for. I think the pressure of the job's massively got to him. It's been very difficult. And I think maybe in the summer they've got to look at that position again. Anyway, at the bottom of the table, big result for Bolton Wanderers, a big Blackburn Rovers 2-1. I know we call him David Wheater there.
He'd love that.
Yeah, he would.
He scored two, you can call him that now.
Exactly, he's got a brace there. Junior Hoylett. A haul down for a penalty.
Definite penalty.
Well, not haul down.
I mean, David Wittair. What a race.
Thoros.
Yeah. Hoylett should have had a penalty, though. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Blatant.
It's one of those ones where you just think, I can't even give him the benefit. That's a definite pen. Yeah. There's no way around it.
Yeah. But it's a great win for Bolton, and obviously particularly good because of Fabrice Muamba, who's shown some real good signs of improving in his condition.
He apparently watched his team on Match of the Day. Yeah. Can you imagine watching like the amount of love for that man on the television? Like you got Real Madrid players and
Barca. I actually found the Aaron Cole down the camera thing quite emotional.
That it was really sweet, wasn't it? It was really touching because he said, you know, we all think the world of you. It's just like, oh,
yeah. I found that very lovely, actually.
Yeah. Well, we like Cole.
I think that whilst I don't want to get too trite about it, I think that around the country in the Premier League, there was tributes were spot on. I mean, it happened at Stamford Bridge. I mean, the Blackburn fans were singing along with the Barton fans. Yeah. What do you think the rivalry there?
Absolutely.
It's great to see, actually.
Yeah, well done, everybody. Also, as well, what was, you know, on a different level, you know, with the fact that Wigan won, the fact that Bolton won, you know, and Blackburn picked up some wins recently, it's still really tight down there.
Yeah, it is.
And no one's pulling away. They're all getting wins at the right time.
Wolves are struggling big
time. Yeah, I think Wolves are pretty much gone.
And QPR.
Such a tough run in.
Yeah.
You're worried for QPR.
They've still got Arsenal, Chelsea, United, City, and Spurs.
And I think they might have to play Liverpool as well.
Who have Villa got, though? That's what I want to know.
Well, Villa, I'll tell you something, Pete. Yeah, I just wanted to say briefly before you...
And I hate saying it.
Before you moved on Bolton Blackburn, without being a sort of party pooper, because obviously Mwamba's the most important thing, there was some dreadful set-piece defending in that game.
But wasn't there just...
Wheater scored two. It was no one near him. Mm. One of the goals Wheater scored was a Blackburn player flicking it on.
Have you seen that video of David Wheater headbutting ice cubes?
Because
clearly he's learned to work on his heading technique. That second goal was an absolute bullet.
He looks like Punch from Punch and Judy.
He does, or a witch, sort of generic witch.
Aston Villa, who incidentally didn't turn up at the Emirates at the weekend, they were dreadful. They've still got to play their next four games. I thought to myself, well, they have one or two more points, they'll be fine. And Zogby is out. Mm-hmm. He's probably one of their best players because Bent's obviously out already.
And Zogby is patchy as well, though.
He is.
He's unreliable.
Haven't they signed that Australian lads winger? He's like a proper journeyman midfielder.
Harry Kuehl.
He's going to go in the summer, and he's like he's dog pops, and he's not. If I was a Villa fan, I'd be like, nah, not having this.
Their next four games are Chelsea at home, Liverpool away, Stoke at home, United away. They could be right in the mix in a month's time.
Yeah,
it's
classic. One team gets dragged in. It's quicksand. That's what Villa Park's built on at the moment.
No, it is.
Did you see Shea Given on the Couch Match of the Day too? A lot of padding in that programme. Let's put on a video of Shea Given's best bits. It's
some of the best kits he's worn.
They didn't
weren't even that many saves in it.
Well, they didn't even put the Zidane run. Zidane took that wicked free kick against Ireland and he just palmed it away.
Can I say, timed that filling and it was 8 minutes. 8 minutes.
Just go for a sleep. Tell us you're going to go for a bit of a mid-show siesta. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Yeah. Don't worry about it. You don't have to pad.
Just be honest.
Put the best Premier League moments 95 on. Yeah. Love a bit of that, mate.
Do you know what I mean?
On a Sunday night.
It doesn't take much. No. Anyway, we've got to mention Grant Holt scoring a brace and then getting a red card.
First goal.
Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? He bent his run proper as well to defeat the offside trap.
Lovely to see him knock it over the keeper and then head home.
It's a Gordie Howe hat trick. Two goals and they're sending off.
I think that's probably what he had in mind.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Get him on the plane.
I was going to say, if he's getting sent off when he really doesn't need to, that is England material.
Yeah, it is. Well, a little bit of rest before the championships.
Yeah.
And then
maybe put in a massive, like, violent conduct situation when he comes back. Get the last few games of the season off as a rest. Yeah. And he can lead the line for England.
Absolutely.
As skipper.
Don't let that man eat. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Don't give him time off.
Do not feed him after midnight.
Right, we're going to leave the Premier League there for another week because we're going to go to the Johnston Paint Trophy final where Chesterfield beat Swindon Town 2-0.
Oh, Paolo won't be happy.
He won't be happy. Good for Chesterfield, though. They're bottom of League One. But Swindon, top of League Two.
I do not care. I will win this trophy.
Yeah, but he didn't. Did you see Di Canio at one point? He was like on his knees, giving it a real passionate. He was praying, and he said, "I was praying I could change 8 of the players, but I would also change the manager."
Just do some tactics.
Yeah, 8 of the players. Who were the three? He then said, of course, he was disappointed with his team's performance. He said, "Now I'm not sure he really means this first bit. I'm the first responsible, but I needed much more from my experienced players, not the disaster that they made."
Fair do.
I'm responsible, but you've made a disaster.
Yeah. I've given you the raw materials to make an absolute tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm responsible because I let you all onto the field of play.
I'm sorry that you got offended by that.
That's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking, was it late March now? How long is it going to be before he gets on the field? Because he is raring to go.
Let it happen.
Can you chaps remember at the beginning of the season when he was appointed, or whatever it was he was appointed, we all said, we'll give him till Christmas, max. Yeah. Absolute maximum. To be fair, he's stuck it out. He's got into a final in the top of the league.
Yeah, he's doing really well, isn't he? they're roasting that league. They are. Now let's go to the SPL, where there was a magnificent Glasgow derby.
What a match.
Rangers won 3-2, so they prolonged Celtic winning the league title. But and the commentators kept saying it, the atmosphere unbelievable.
Even by the sort of Old Firm derby.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That topped anything I've ever seen before. But it was
so
like...
So much at stake, though.
But Rangers, if you look at the facts, Rangers had lost 3 home games in a row, which is unprecedented. Yeah. Well, it was, because if they'd lost one more, it would have been the only time in their history.
Celtic hadn't lost in 21 games.
The whole of the blue half of Glasgow just went, no, you're not winning that here. Yeah. Pretty much, wasn't it?
But admittedly, you are still winning it.
Yeah.
There were so many good goals that could have been scored. Samaras, where he just marauded up the pitch, took it around a couple of players, paused, and the keeper just managed to claw it out. Yeah. Oh, man. There was a good volley from, I can't remember who did it, at far corner. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Hooper.
Yeah.
Yeah, when McGregor made a great save.
McGregor made some excellent saves.
Yeah.
I thought the first sending off for Celtic was harsh, actually.
I thought it was a touch harsh.
He lost the ball. He sort of didn't really have control of the ball, and there was another defender covering anyway. Yeah. So I know.
Is that Char?
Yeah.
He sort of did a sort of like a camp little, oh, get off.
I think it's one of those ones where it always looks worse because they're going at pace and the defender's just ever so slightly leaning in, not breaking the rules, but when that player goes down, the defender goes down on top of him and it makes it look far worse. Yeah.
Celtic have been the best team. I mean, regardless of Rangers' 10-point deduction, Celtic have still been the best team in the division. And they will win it, and rightly so. But what about Reece McCabe, that young midfielder? Well, he had an excellent game.
Do you know what? That was, for me, that was the most enjoyable thing of the whole game, was seeing a 19-year-old Scottish lad in the centre of the park for Rangers, just in front of the defence, spraying the ball around beautifully.
He's quite small as well.
Yeah, he's only played 3 games, I think, for Rangers. Now, this is last week or the week before, we were talking about McCoist not fielding a full bench because the youth team didn't deserve to get the call up or whatever it was. But McCabe, so it's great to see him come in, but he's only played 3 games, something like that.
And he's played a couple of games at fullback, I think.
Yeah, to come in such a massive, high-profile and pressured game, to just be stroking it about as if he's been doing it for years.
And let's be honest, against a few old dogs and a few old salty sea dogs, Scott Brown, who'd eat you for dinner.
Scott Brown. I think that's very encouraging to see. I thought that was great.
I was going to say, also, when Celtic scored their second in injury time, The fourth official had gone 4 minutes.
He had,
And so I'm thinking, goal on the celebration, you had a minute on. And there was a sub as well.
I think it's 30 seconds.
Well, there was a sub as well.
He did stop it on 94.
He stopped it just before 94.
Yeah.
I think he stopped it about 10 seconds before. And I was thinking to myself, do you know what? If I was going to be childish about it, Leonard had already been sent off, so he couldn't say anything about it. He couldn't.
So you're going to pick up the slack.
I might do, I think that's a bit unfair, actually.
And I basically want to make a coffee table book for dour men who operate in the Scottish League. There's a few of them. And just have a nice little.
A few in the English League, to be fair.
Does Craig Levein count?
I don't know. I don't think Levein's do.
He's horrible.
He's not too...
just every. He speaks as if everything that has just been said to him is really offensive.
Okay. Jim Jefferies is, my goodness.
This is
perfect.
Workable. It's workable.
Yeah.
I liked it when Lennon was at great pains after the game to say, I went up to the referee, I was very polite, I didn't shout, I didn't swear. Next day, slapped on the charge. Swearing. Offensive language.
Lennon was sent off.
Lying.
Aluko got the game going with a brilliant individual game.
Superb, just run and powerful. Just clever movement to get himself into that space.
Nutmeg as well.
Yeah,
was that Rod Wallace who scored as well?
It was, or was it Danny?
Indeed. Rangers, Celtic down to 9 men. But even so, though, Rangers I thought were excellent.
Yeah, but you know, Celtic were down to 9 men.
No, but I thought Rangers were good value anyway. I thought McCoy's got his tactics spot on. The 3-5-2. A bit of that.
I always like to see that.
But the wing backs really bombed on, and of course that's where the first sending off came from. Putting Lee McCulloch up top, I mean, he just battered them all over the pitch, didn't he?
Has there ever been a striker more cut out for the Scottish League?
Oh my goodness. But that freed up Aluko, to do his stuff, and he was a constant threat. But it would have been incredible if Celtic could have got it back at 3-all, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it just? But yeah, so what about Bocanegra sent off for Rangers at the end? If you were McCoist.
What are you doing?
Yeah. You know, 88 minutes, 3-0 up. Why are you diving in? Yeah. If he scores, oh well, you know, consolation.
McCoy seemed all right at the end, though, didn't he? Seemed quite pleased.
He was very pleased. And his face.
His
emotion spilled out of his face.
The contortion of a face. Yeah, it was like you say, it was like emotions like personified.
Yeah.
It was very strange.
Here's a little fact for you. Only twice in the last 73 Old Firm derbies have the team who have scored first gone on to lose the match.
Were they all this season?
I'm not sure. But yeah, incredible, isn't it? Right, from the SPL to La Liga. The SPL in the sun. Real Madrid back to winning ways. They beat Real Sociedad 5-1.
Didn't they?
Can I just say, didn't turn up.
No, did not turn up in any
shape or form.
55 minutes in, they were 5-1 up. And yeah. Ronaldo was celebrating. I was thinking, can you even muster the enthusiasm to celebrate?
Yeah.
5-1, 55 minutes.
Well, their goal was superb, though. Real Madrid have got this weird habit of getting absolute meaningless wonder goals scored against them. They're that good. There's a bit of osmosis going on for the other team, but not enough that they're ever going to lose.
The other team gets in their sip stream and actually plays quite well. Because against Villarreal, Madrid had a disaster.
That was last week, yeah. They did three players. Ramos and Ozil and Mourinho, of course, sent off in the end.
And Mourinho's
Celtic-esque. Yeah. Top of the league. There's many comparisons.
I always feel a bit surprised when Ozil gets sent off. It seems like quite a mild manager.
I wouldn't have thought that. But Ronaldo set a new record by reaching 100 goals in the Spanish league faster than anyone who's gone before him. 101 goals in 92 La Liga matches. Just suck that in for a minute, because we all go on about Messi, but
it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and rightly so about Messi, by the way. But you don't forget Ronaldo there. I mean, the French Puskás, the Hungarian legend, of course, who played for Madrid in the 50s and 60s, scored 100 in 105 league games, but just unbelievable. Ronaldo, 45 goals in all competitions this season, and he's not an out-and-out front man.
No, staggering.
And that Puskás record was when they played a lot more strikers and the game was a lot more attacking.
Yeah, you've only got a lot more high scores.
Yeah, you've only got to look at the European Cup final.
Although saying that, you know, Barca and Madrid have really brought that back into
the league. They're averaging 4 goals, I think,
a game
at home.
Crazy.
Ridiculous.
But it's 6 points now, isn't it, between them and Barca? Mm. Is that right?
Yeah, they're 6 points, yeah. So, but,
all that's got to happen is Real Madrid to lose a game and Barca to win one, and then Barca beat Real Madrid
and they win.
And that's it, yeah. So it's closer than it seems. Mm. I still think Real Madrid will do it for the record, though.
Let's talk about the island in the sun. Real Madrid are to build their own luxury island-themed holiday resort in the United Arab Emirates. More specifically, though, on the artificial island in the north of the country, in the Emirati of Ras Al Khaimah. Have you seen the video for this, chaps? It's worth seeing, ladies and gentlemen.
It is terrifying.
It is. It's almost dystopian. It looks like the manifesto of a terrorist organisation that are sort of just hell bent on taking over the world.
Well,
it's terrifying.
Well, and I've got a quote to back that up from the president, Florentino Perez.
Of course you have.
And I make it up if I didn't. That's not true. He said, "It is a decisive and strategic step that will strengthen our institution in the Middle East and Asia." I mean, strategic and all this.
For the people who aren't initiating this complex includes a full-size stadium to play hologram football games in.
Well, no, it's not a full-size. That one side of the stadium's open to the sea.
Yeah, but it's massive, anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's as if, like, if you booted the ball hard enough, it would just end up in the sea.
It's a hologram ball,
but
isn't
it? The ball's a hologram.
I'm sure they'll still play a real team.
They will still play football on that pitch. I mean, even they're not so wasteful.
Just fancy a game on it?
There'll be once a year training session there or something for the cameras. But, yeah, the resort will have luxury hotels, villas, an amusement park.
Because, obviously, they can't have the Real Madrid team playing in week in week out on the Real Madrid
at the Real Madrid stadium.
Like they have got this hologram system, presumably for the Jewish players, because
they're not allowed there.
Well, yeah, it's going to open in 2015, so get saving. They reckon it'll attract 1 million visitors in that year alone.
They say a lot of things, don't they?
They do. It's going to cost $1 billion, but £631 million.
It'll attract 1 million visitors if we make them go there ourselves. Yeah.
it's crazy. There's a big roller coaster, isn't there, which I think they should call the Real Madrid Manager's Experience.
Yeah. Although it disappears right Ronaldo's arse.
There you go. So there's your La Liga info for another week, gang. We're on to Serie A now, where Milan beat Roma 2-1. Zlatan.
Sorry, yeah.
was going to correct you there. Who beat Roma 2-1?
Zlatan did. He's back.
He could have had about 8 goals that game.
Yeah.
He's so many chances.
Did you see the second one? It was Grant Holt-esque.
It was. Yeah. He just flicked it over the goalkeeper and just he had to fight it.
Do you know what? That's it. He flicked it over the keeper and the ball was up in the air and he was waiting for it to come down and the defender was like, he's just like, no.
Come on. I've got a black belt, pal. A black belt.
And I'm 6 foot billion. And you know, it's not happening.
In that onslaught of Milan chances, they're well low. Roma win a goal ahead. I can't believe it. It's such against the run of play.
Tell you what, though, Thiago Silva's picked up an injury and looks as though he'll miss both legs of the Barcelona Champions
League. That is huge. Such a shame.
Huge. He's probably the best defender, or one of certainly in the world.
I'd certainly say so. I mean, it's going to be a big loss to them against Barca, obviously. Mm.
And in the time,
and there'll be this talk that he'll even be a big loss to them for Barca in the transfer window as well.
Well, exactly, yeah. It's long term,
Indeed. Now, the Derby of Italy also happened, where Juventus beat Inter 2-0. And who came on to get the clincher? It was Alessandro Del Piero.
Get him in. Come on, Ian. Get him in.
More importantly, it was slips as well.
It was a slip and a brush.
Beautiful. Yeah, a slip and a brush.
Beautiful finish. But the first goal, it was Martin Cáceres, is that how you pronounce it?
Cáceres.
Marking him on a corner. Just woeful from Inter. What are they doing?
Oh, sorry. Just to go back to the Milan game real quick, I really wanted to say that when Milan got that penalty, it's something you don't see enough of anymore. Heinze and the referee had a proper row.
Oh, didn't they?
Like, you know, someone has a go at the ref and he just stands there. The ref was giving it stacks back to Heinze.
Heinze basically made a really good save.
It was
an unbelievable penalty. Do you know what? I forgot Heinze played for Roma, and when they did that, I thought that's the kind of that's the kind of thing Heinze would be. Oh yeah,
it is him.
Yeah, I thought so.
That's what you got when you paid for him.
But yeah, great win for Juve. They're still in the title race. But Del Piero coming on in the Derby of Italy in his final season for Juventus. Gorgeous. That's what we like to see. Now we're out of Europe. Now we're into Brazil. Following on from the Ricardo Teixeira business, he has indeed resigned from his post of on the FIFA Executive Committee as Brazil's representative. He, of course, has resigned as the Brazilian FA head of.
If you're on the FIFA Executive Committee, I think it would be a bit of a wrench to resign from it because it's a pretty good place to be.
A constant flow of other people's money in your pocket, doing much to get it. But they've replaced him.
It's like stepping down from being a blowjob tester.
Oh dear. Bloody blokes, aren't we, eh?
I love blowjobs, me.
Oi.
Give in. Yeah.
Apologise. if I may continue, they have replaced him with Marco Polo Del Nero. Great name.
Marco Polo.
And then he was there. And that's how they got him. And he's the head of the Sao Paulo Football Federation. A little bit of background on Del Nero, if you want to know what he's like. He's 71, so no spring chicken. A lawyer who specialises in criminal law. He's worked in Brazilian football for a few years now. He led the Brazilian delegation to the 2006 World Cup, but some critics said he didn't plan it that well, which is one of the factors in Brazil's disappointing quarterfinal exit. And also became a member of CONMEBOL in 2007. But according to David Hills in The Observer, Del Nero in 2008 was given a 90-day suspension for falsely accusing a referee of rigging a match in exchange for Madonna concert tickets.
Oh, you'll fit right in.
What a weird trade.
Aye, aye, aye.
What a specific complaint.
So, he's in. Another FIFA man for Andrew Jennings to get his teeth into. And let's hope he does.
In a way, it's good news.
Yeah, I think so. Now, the CBF, the Brazil's Football Association presidency, is up for grabs. Romário has ruled himself out. Okay, he doesn't want to do it. But he thinks Ronaldo is the man to save football in Brazil. But Ronaldo said he won't run for presidency, but would accept the position if it was given to him.
Well, he's not run for anything for a long time, has he?
Well, he can't be bothered.
And basically, he appears to accept everything that's given to him.
Just give me the job.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, so...
So, basically, his best way of getting the job is saying he doesn't want it.
Yeah.
Saying just playing hard to get.
Yeah. I'm not going to run for it, but if you give it me...
I'll have it.
Yeah. He's never gone for a proper job, has he?
No, this slack bastard.
But let's be clear, would you like to see Ronaldo in charge of the Brazilian Football
Association? Yeah, of course.
Getting involved in the corruption and all that.
Well, would he? I don't know.
Maybe he'd be the white knight.
This is what Romario says.
None of this is real to me. the more you know, figures I'm aware of involved, the better. It just makes the cartoon more interesting.
God knows he can't handle figures, Romario.
Exactly.
Oh dear. And one final story before we go for gold is in a lower league game in Brazil. The referee for a particular fixture has been suspended after CCTV footage from a petrol station showed him buying booze a few hours before kickoff, and apparently he was held upright by a couple of people. He was hammered, ladies and gentlemen,
like sort of Weekend at Bernie's referee.
Yeah. Well, his name is Jose Roberto Marquez, and he claimed he wasn't drunk, just anxious,
because he'd had so much to drink. Yeah. But it was affecting the way he felt.
It's like Luke on the way to the studio. Sometimes he's a bit anxious. You and I have to prop him up.
Yeah. No, I am battered.
Yeah. Well, the director of one of the teams involved said that when Marquez arrived for the game, he had 20 cups of water and kept laughing at the players. I absolutely love that. He then told a ball boy to take a corner. I felt that was very strange.
That was your first clue.
You certainly won't find it in any textbook.
No. Oh, yo, littlein'.
Yeah.
Hurry up and take the corner.
Oh, my God.
You funny sod.
We ain't got all day. The pub closes in a bit. It's not time wasted.
I love it that he's laughing at all the players. Yeah. Oh, look at you playing football.
No, bed.
I'm going to send you off.
Penalty.
I am centre of attention now.
Oh, I fucking love penalties, me.
I'm taking it. I'm taking it.
Have a couple more. Stick that old lady and go. Wicked.
Yeah. And now it's time for Going for Glold.
Going for Glold. This is a listener suggestion. I've had a few. I don't want to stoke the fires, but guys, I've had enough. I've got enough. For
Pete, is the next stage going to be you getting to send the clues in as well, so you haven't got to do it?
Well, this man has pretty much done a lot of them, but in a very sort of narrative format, which I've separated into questions and double-checked the clues. So okay. Up yours.
up it goes.
I played in the 1998 and 2002 World Cup.
Stop. Zidane.
Stop.
No.
Mark Overmars.
No.
You only get one stop per
team. Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. Well, we have yours.
I don't want one.
Okay.
I crossed the Milan Divide.
Oh. Stop.
Go on.
Hernan Crespo?
No.
Clarence Seedorf?
No. Anyone for any more, Mark?
Okay, go on.
Luke?
No, go on.
I've played in England, Germany, Serbia...
Stop. Hakan Suka.
No.
Oh, I thought it was it.
Qatar, Nigeria and Iran.
Oh.
Stop. Ah, no. Ignore that one.
Go on.
Okay, then. My first taste of English football was Derby County.
Stop. Paolo Wanchope.
No.
Stop.
sorry, that was...
Stop. Ravinelli.
No.
2002 World Cup,
Ravinelli. Middlesbrough, wasn't it?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, God.
He had monumentally shit hair.
Stop. Taribo West.
Taribo West.
Yes! Well, come on.
Thank you, Howard Rocklosky, for that suggestion.
Great
name. Sounds like some sort of detective or lawyer. Hmm. Highfalutin lawyer.
FBI agent.
Yeah. Let's go to the emails. Let's...
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
All right, rah-rah rambler, Russia's greatest love machine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like that, yeah.
Mixing a blend.
Whilst I was at college, I had a job as a silver service waiter in the hospitality boxes at the Riverside Stadium in Middlesbrough. I have many unusual stories from my time there, including interrupting Bobby Robson mid-story to get his drinks order, being felt up by the staff of a local radio station, and trying to find bourbon cream for Gary Lineker. But by far the weirdest people were the private owners of the boxes. Most of the boxes were decorated in a sort of zombie skin puce, but for a little extra money, private owners were allowed to decorate their own rooms. One woman filled the room with high back leather chairs and calfskin rugs. It looked like a pimp's retirement home. But the worst day was when I walked in and saw that she had put a nude painting of herself on one wall. I panicked and turned my head quickly, only to see that she'd put a mirror on the opposite wall. Horrific.
Oh,
that's from Paul McGarrity. That is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, very weird.
That's what we got up in Ramble that? HQ.
My goodness.
And we thought the Real Madrid Island was frivolous.
Yeah. That's outrageous.
The Middlesbrough boxes.
Living the high life at the Riverside.
Flipping
it. I smell a sitcom.
Whenever I move into a new house, that's the first thing I put
up. On the ceiling, though, isn't it? The mirrors.
And now it's time for a profile, you beauties. We've got Neville Southall.
Yes! My favourite goalkeeper ever.
The big man.
The huge man.
Yeah.
The walrus of football.
A man who was clearly told at an early age to make yourself look big.
Yeah.
And continued throughout his life.
A man who is practically men.
Pound for pound. The best goalkeeper we've ever seen. Yeah. Professor Unit, Neville Southall.
Like watching an aircraft carry a disco dance.
Yeah.
Like a brick wall with the reflexes of a cat.
Yeah.
He's all those things. MBE. He was born on the 16th of September 1958.
Oh, 9 years before the Summer of Love.
9 years. 9 years. No coincidence.
Stop.
Yes.
Neville Southall.
It is.
Yes!
I'll carry on. One of the great British goalkeepers, and we've had a few from this island, let me tell you. An Evertonian legend. Mm,
yeah.
And one of the best players that Wales have ever produced.
He was world class at points.
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly late 80s.
I'll go as far as to say, I think he at one point was the best goalkeeper in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shove it right up your jumper, listeners.
Neville has. Oh, no, that's his got.
If you don't like it, you know where to find me. Yes, I have had a drink.
And a real character too.
Yeah.
Big Nev.
Had a good cookie duster, didn't he?
Oh, he did. Oh,
great soup strainer on him.
That was very good.
Big Ned Flanders, isn't it?
Oh,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, he started his footballing journey at centre-back for his school.
He's gone too far. He's overshot.
Played very deep.
He had a few trials in his teens for Bolton Wanderers, most notably. But he didn't get in, so carried on life doing a number of different jobs here and there, including bin man.
Yeah, he's a famous bin man.
Yeah. I could see him doing that as well. Yeah. Are you brilliant?
Sorry, he was a famous bin man. Well, no, but before...
It's one of the famous things
bin man went on to be a famous
him.
Goalkeeper.
Well, you know when you used to get like, I mean, because you'll come on to this, but when they were in the cup final in 95, back in the day, it used to be, that TV programme used to start at 9 in the morning. They'd profile every player. I remember them talking about Big Nev being a bin on the bins.
I like to fantasise that he got his amazing cat-like agility from like people throwing like the wrong items into the back of the dust cart.
Yeah.
And him having to go, whoa, that's recycling. Sort of diving up.
Like, there was no recycling, man.
In Wales in the early 80s.
That's a dog. Don't put dogs in
the... That's another human being.
The planet's...
That's a football. Oh.
The planet's...
I've got something here.
Mate, that's not a mine. Get out.
Oh dear. So he started playing for Welsh amateur side Winsford United, a few other teams before then, but it was Winsford in the late 70s when he got noticed by Bury, and he signed with them in 1980 for £6,000. Played a full season with Bury and then was spotted by Everton, who were managed by Howard Kendall, a fellow Dean Windass Hall of Fame E.
Nice chap, Kendall.
Yeah indeed. They snapped him up for £150,000, and so his career at Everton began. Initially battling with Jim Arnold for the number one jersey, Southall was dropped quite early on in his Everton career after they were beaten 5-0 by Liverpool. Absolute spanking. And imagine how much that would have knocked your confidence as a young keeper. You've not
especially
been
against Liverpool as well.
That's right. I mean, yeah, everyone would have seen that as well. But
the embarrassment would have just been magnified so much.
Exactly. And no one would have ever predicted what he went on to achieve at that club after that. But by the end of 1983, he was first choice keeper and would keep that number one spot for a ruddy long time.
Yeah.
And went on to be a true Everton great, no doubt about it. It was a crucial player for Everton in that golden period of the 80s under Kendall. Absolutely loved by the fans. And, you know, a number of that Everton side just said he gave us so much confidence having the big man behind you, especially the defence.
The mid-80s team was great.
Yeah.
The mid-80s team when they won the Cup Winners' Cup were they Peter Reid, Kevin Sheedy, and I'll tell you what, big Andy Gray up
there
front.
He scored in the final, to be fair.
Well,
to him.
Give him credit.
Yeah, no, I'm saying to be fair.
Yeah.
But Howard Kendall said, I'm a firm believer that you never win trophies without an outstanding goalkeeper.
He, one-on-one, he was one of the best goalkeepers, or certainly point-blank range shots.
He loved the one-on-one.
He would just stick out a hand and it would just be, like, magnetised.
Yeah, but
it was such an exciting goalkeeper to watch.
But he'd get a strong hand to those shots as well. Like, it was just magnificent. Just an absolute repellent of the ball.
It would just end up in the back of the net. But he just had such, you know, he didn't have a lot of range. He didn't have a big wingspan. But he just seemed to have so much strength in his wrists.
And his timing was absolutely superb. He would know exactly when to go down, when to stay up, when to stand.
Jimmy loved one for the cameras. He used to flick his legs out quite a lot when he saved them. There's one I forget who it was against now. But
was it against Spurs? The famous tip over the bar.
But he tipped so many over the
bar. I know, but there was a particular...
There's one particular one which sticks in the mind where the camera is right down the barrel of it and someone's on the left-hand side and they bend behind the far corner It's from downtown, and he's seen it from a long way off, and he's over the other side of the goal. But he waits for ages, and then just legs it across and massively tips over.
I remember he did that when Mike Hooper at Ferdia Castle nearly lobbed him. He didn't even need to tip it over.
Could've caught it,
he could have just stood up and put one hand bang. But he proper.
That's why we like him, though.
Oh, he's such an exciting keeper to watch.
He made a Gordon Banks-esque save against Villa, I think it was, as well. When hammered it down the wing. And put one over at the far stick, and Southall was scrambling back to which would have been then his near post, and someone point blank drilled it and pushed it around the post. It's one of the best saves I've ever seen.
Also, it was very, very good with his feet, and that's a really important skill to know when to be able to pull it out as a goalkeeper. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, that is very true. But I think, Pete, absolutely, with the one-on-ones, like, can you imagine if you're a striker, you put through on goal, and you're like, right, here we go, and you put your head up, and you just see Big Nev bearing down.
It's all you can see.
You'd pass
Fred
it.
Trend.
You'd pass it, even if that was playing it back into your own half.
I'd go down.
I think I'd just retire.
There and then.
But 85 was a big year for Everton.
Yeah, he won two FA Cups with Everton, of course, and they won the league in 85 and 87. The Cup Winners' Cup as well in 85. They were denied the treble in 85. They lost to Manchester United in the final. And Big Nev rued that. He said about Manchester United, because they'd beaten Bayern Munich in the semi-final of the Cup Winners' Cup. And he actually said the final was a little bit of an anticlimax.
Well, they beat Rapid Vienna in the final.
They did, yeah. But he said Bayern Munich were by far the best team in that competition. And when they won the semi-final,
they knew,
exactly. But he said about losing to Manchester United in the FA Cup final, he said, they were really shit compared to Bayern Munich.
You know. That's great. Was that in the post-match interview on BBC?
I hope so. He won the Football Writers' Player of the Year Award in 95. Only one of four goalkeepers to have been awarded this: Bert Trautmann, Gordon Banks, and Pat Jennings, the others.
I think I get the impression from Southall that could have been just because he would play for like a sort of 11-a-side team of writers on a Sunday as well.
Yeah.
Just because he loved playing so much.
Like John Burridge.
Yeah, he was like John Burridge in a way, wasn't he? Because it took him a long, long time to retire. Loved it.
Not a figure of a sportsman either.
No, absolutely not.
I can remember in about 2001 when he turned up for Bradford.
Well, we'll come on to that. But he was the last keeper to have won the Football Writers' Award, you know.
I thought Schmeichel would have won it.
No, he hasn't
won it.
If we fast forward a few years, obviously the 80s, you know, were a great period for Everton there. But they then went a while without winning a trophy. And South have got a few arguments from the board upstairs, one thing or another. And he did hand in a transfer request a couple of times, but that was always denied because they knew what an important figure he was at the club. And in the opening game of the 1990 season, Everton trailed Leeds 3-0 at half-time, and Southall famously refused to go into the dressing room at the break and stayed on the pitch, having a little sit-down on the field. And many thought this was some kind of protest, but Southall said, it was to get the best out of me and the best out of the team. I did actually pop in at half-time, but there was all sorts of shit going on in there, so I wanted a nice peaceful place to clear my head, and I found a place to do it.
That's fair enough. A keeper's job's the same, isn't it?
I think an Everton fan might have run on the pitch to say something to him, but Big Nev confirmed it was all right. I love this. He said,
"He just stood up, you know, made himself big."
Well, he was saying, you know, it was ideal because it was really quiet outside. And he said, "The fellow who ran over to say something to me had tiled in the bathroom, so I knew who he was."
Wonderful euphemism.
The game was different back then.
You just wanted to catch up.
Was it all right, by the way?
I've invoiced you.
Throw a friend in this customer survey.
How's
your sealant?
Everton lost 3-2, but they got some pride back on the score sheet. But yeah, from 87, I think it was, to 95, Everton didn't win any trophies. But in 95, they beat Manchester United in the FA Cup final 1-0 with a Paul Rideout goal.
Yeah, great game, Southall. Had lots of shots to save in that game.
And that was
his Vaseline sort of era, wasn't it? Where he would just put a full tub of Vaseline on his head to prevent the sweat going past his eyebrows. So much Vaseline.
Too much. That was his last trophy, and he ended his Everton career at the end of 1997. We should also mention as well that he was imperious for Wales at times. I mean, they didn't have a great side back then. It was a shame. He never played at a World Cup.
He didn't get many caps, did he, for Wales?
92. He's the record cap holder for Wales. His last game for Wales was in a 6-4 loss away to Turkey in a World Cup 98 qualifier.
6-4?
Yeah, they came quite close to qualifying for one.
They did.
But I think Scotland drew against him, and they needed to. I think Scotland scored like a late equaliser.
I think that was 78.
Was it? Okay.
I think it was 78.
No, I think Neville Southall was playing. I think it was later than that.
There was one. You are right. Yeah. I forget which one that was. And also in 94, the Welsh weren't far away, I don't think. Yeah, so it was a shame for him. He never played at a World Cup.
But 92 Welsh caps, incredible achievement there. Indeed, he actually managed Wales caretaker. Manager for one game in 99, I think. But after Everton in the late 90s, he became a massive journeyman, with the emphasis on the word massive. Briefly playing for Southend, Stoke, a couple of years at Torquay. He played over 50 games for Torquay in Division 3 at Huddersfield, and then went to Bradford, back in the Prem for one match.
It was an emergency loan, I believe.
Yeah, the age of 41 and a 2-1 loss to Leeds.
Big Michael boy. Bridges scored a couple of
He did.
Yeah.
Big boy back then, wasn't he?
Oh, my good God.
Shipperly-esque.
I think he's got to be, and this is a profile celebrating his career, so I don't disrespect him too much, but he must be the fattest player to ever play.
But it's more his agility with that amount of bulk. Do you know what I mean? It's an achievement. Imagine how weird he would have looked if he was like Van der Sar skinny.
Yeah, I know.
Weird.
I got a little story about Big Nev. When I was working at a sports shop when I was about 16, that I've got a signed Neville Southall basically released a book, which is like, I think from memory, it's half sort of goalkeeping manual for tips for wannabe keepers and half autobiography.
Wow.
It's a really good idea. So what he does, he applies his like his experience as to why you do things and why you don't, and use them as tips. So he's got stuff in there like, never put your kit bag or a towel in the goal because it gives a striker something to aim at. You always put it outside.
Oh, right.
Stuff like that. It's really good. Yeah. But I was saying to Marcus earlier, I can't actually remember if I met him or not. I've got a signed copy of it.
Surely you'd know.
Well, no, because he came into my shop and signed the book. But I can't remember whether I remember him from photos or whether I saw him or not. Yeah. But anyway, it's a very good book. It's called In Search of Perfection. Other little gems include, never wear a baseball cap if you're a keeper.
No.
Always wear a visor because you don't get as hot. By the way, I've seen Big Nev wearing a cap.
Yeah, I've seen him.
Yeah. Practice showboating. What you preach, Nev.
I've seen him earning some caps.
So he then went on to play for York City, Shrewsbury Town, Dover Athletic, and finished up at Dagenham and Redbridge.
We did a little thing about him when he was turning out for some Sunday side, but he was refusing to play in goal. Jimba?
Yes, right.
And somebody tried
to centre back.
Somebody said, "Who the hell do you think you are?" And he goes, "You know who I am."
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Was it Margate?
Might be. Yeah.
I know he was caretaker manager there for a bit.
Well,
he
better
might
than
have
the
even
team,
been like involved in the sort of the physio work or something.
You sort of look at videos of him now, though. He's, you know, fine fella.
No, it must have been a Sunday side. Margate are like an amateur's team. There's no way he could have been playing for
them. I'd be surprised if he'd played centre back for Margate.
I can just imagine him standing there holding like a string of cooked sausages, just sort of like barely moving but just thumping everything away.
Yeah.
and his finest hour is obviously belittling Michael Owen after he was on the Michael Owen Soccer School TV show.
Well done, he's 13.
Well done, he's 13.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yes, game, set, match, Owen.
Well done, he's 13.
Yeah, maybe a Ramble Tube clip can go up on the website. He was voted Everton's all-time cult hero in 2004 and holds a few Everton records, such as most league appearances, most FA Cup appearances and most clean sheets. 269 clean
sheets.
That's
huge. Yeah. That's huge.
And 750 appearances in all.
Everything Wonderful. About him's huge.
It's no wonder Everton fans are a little bit down here. Yeah. Such a great hit.
Oh, man. But if you want to know more about Big Nev, you can ask him.
Yeah.
Go to asknevillesouthall.com where you can ask him, presumably, anything you like. It costs £49.
Actually, you can do it through the Football Ramble. And we'll pass the message on to him for £70.
It costs him £49. It costs you £49 to send him an email, or £99 for a single 1 hour long phone call. The phone call is probably better.
Better value. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. But still.
Like a but still, really, I mean, whichever weird way. You, sex line.
Whichever way you slice it, it's £100 an hour.
But an hour, though? I mean, I don't think I'd do it for £100.
Yeah.
Is there a point to this? Hello?
Yeah.
I don't know. But one of the biggest and best keepers that Britain has ever produced is Neville Southall. He's coming
in your company.
Team Manager Hall of Fame. Neville Southall, MBE.
Love that, man.
Well, there you are, kids. That's the end of the Football Ramble for this week. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yes, it is. And on the website this week, Liam Toomey focuses on Steve Keane and how he's actually been quite good lately. James Appel looks in depth at the controversy surrounding Lokomotiv Moscow after a fan threw a banana at Christopher Samba while he was playing for Anchi. And Kieran Pender looks at the Socceroos and their key man ahead of their World Cup qualifying campaign. Also, there's The Shop now featuring Ricky Lambert doing You Know What. He said Licky Rabbit there. The Forum, the Hall of Fame, and all kinds of delightful nonsense. Go over there now.
You did actually ask listeners for a Ricky Lambert celebrate t-shirts, and now you've got one, so go and buy them for Pete's sake.
For Peter's sake.
Literally for Pete's sake.
Ricky Lambert.
He's in
down.
Rags here.
Ricky Lambert celebrate.
There we go. Right, say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye,
Pete.
Jim.
Easy.
And goodbye, Luke.
Cars.
See you later from me, Tabernaclers.
Tabernaclers!
Here's Crouch, edge of the penalty here, tries an acrobat.
Oh, my God! You will not see a better goal. It's amazing from Peter Crouch.
Because I went to both a Catholic school and a non-Catholic school, so I had the non-Catholic hymns, didn't even mention God in them, and also the Catholic ones.
Yeah, what,
best of both worlds.
I had
autumn days when the grass is jewelled.
And a win for my home team.
That's it.
I went
jet planes meeting in the air to be refuelled, all these
I
things
did Church
I
of England,
so
and we had these hymns.
And we mustn't forget... And we mustn't forget to say a great big thank you. I mustn't forget.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.